What is up, Vermont Edition podcast listener? This is Elodie Reed, digital producer for VPR. Just to let you know, this podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. At the beginning of this week, the Burlington mayor, Moreau Weinberger, called a press conference to address questions about Burlington Police Chief Brandon Del Pozo's use of a secret social media account that the chief had used last summer to heckle a critic of the city named Charles Winkleman. Del Pozo lied about the account when asked directly and repeatedly by 7 Days reporter Courtney Lambden. After he was pressed by Lambden, Del Pozo told the mayor what he had done, and the mayor placed him on administrative leave. Shortly after that, the chief was placed on medical leave for 6 weeks when medical officials determined that an underlying medical condition had contributed to his online behavior. The medical leave was announced to the public. The administrative leave was not. This month, Winkleman wrote a blog post detailing why he thought the chief had been harassing him anonymously. Lambden followed up, and both Del Pozo and Mayor Weinberger admitted to the details of the social media use. So at the press conference on Monday, Weinberger announced the resignation of Chief Del Pozo.
And while it was clear to me that despite his mistakes, he continued to have considerable support within the city council, the police department, the police commission, and the community, it was also clear that if he continued to serve, the days ahead would be very challenging for him, his family, the department, and the city.
After naming an interim replacement, Deputy Chief Jan Wright, Weinberger had to announce that she, too, had been using an anonymous social media account, and she was removed from the interim chief position in favor of Deputy Chief John Murad. And Weinberger says the city will be investigating Wright's use of social media and looking into social media use in the department at large. This is the most front and center issue facing the mayor of Vermont's largest city, but not the only one. Today, Mayor Moreau Weinberger joins us to talk about police issues, including lawsuits over use of force, as well as other issues like delayed city place development that's left a visible hole in the center of downtown, and ongoing challenges like affordable housing. Mayor Weinberger, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Jane, it's great to be with you in the studio as always. It's awesome coming in here and seeing everything you guys have done to make this a pretty remarkable a gem for Vermont.
Thank you. Let's talk first about the situation with Chief Del Pozo, and then we can broaden that into other issues with the Burlington Police Department as well. Why didn't you reveal to the public or to a wider circle of city officials that you had placed the police chief on administrative leave, which includes taking his badge and gun, after he had revealed to you that he had used this anonymous social media account to heckle Charles Winkleman and had lied to a reporter about it?
Well, the initial and there's been a lot of focus on this period between when he was on administrative leave and then went on to medical leave. Throughout the period that he was on administrative leave, and actually through the entire medical leave, there was an open investigation into what had happened here. The chief told me this on a Sunday night in July, and I went in the first thing next morning and convened this meeting with our city attorney and the HR director. It was the first time in business that morning, and we immediately opened this investigation to get as full a picture as we could of exactly what had happened. And in general, a principle that I found to be valuable when dealing with a personnel issue is you want to wait. You want to suspend judgment. You want to get all the information before you start making decisions and start making announcements. You don't always have the luxury. It's been pointed out, you know, there are times obviously when there's been a shooting or something that has been very public. We have to be clear that we have put someone on administrative leave while they while we are figuring it out. I think the preferable ability is not to make any kind of irreversible decisions, announcements until you have figured the situation out. So that's what was going on during those early hours. By the later part of that first week, we had these rulings by two independent medical professionals, that first the chief's doctor and then the city's own medical examiner, that said his actions here had been implicated by a medical condition, his mental health condition. And at that point, we treated the chief, we made this decision, which I know some people are now criticizing, you know, and I understand how people can come to a different decision than I did here. But what I felt after hearing from our medical, our employee meant professionals, was that we should treat the chief like we would any other employee, which is to say we would do what we could to, we actually had a duty to do what we could to protect his medical information, especially given that this was a sensitive kind of mental health situation that could have implications for him, given the stigma that attaches to that.
But he had come to you and said, this wasn't something that you were investigating because you weren't sure what had happened. He came to you and said, this thing happened. I used this anonymous Twitter account and I lied about it. It was an investigation, sure, but you knew what had happened because the chief told you what had happened and you thought it was serious enough at that time to take his gun and badge and place him on administrative leave. And there was that time period between when the administrative leave started and when it was determined by medical professionals that an underlying medical cause could have contributed to this information. Mm-hmm. Are you saying that, you know, if something is not publicly known, if a police officer shoots someone and it's not known publicly, there's no reason to be transparent about administrative leave while investigations are ongoing? And in this case, when the chief himself had revealed the activity that you thought was serious enough to lead to that?
So let me speak to the specific and then the general. I think there are sort of two questions in that. The city attorney spoke to at the press conference, from the very earliest moments of this investigation, look, we were all aware of what had happened to the chief in 2018 with this very public bike accident, in which it was known that he had had a traumatic brain injury during that. So from the very beginning, there was mindfulness of that history, and the question hanging over this was that somehow had that played a role here. So there was really no moment where that was not a question before.
Who brought that question up first?
Just trying to think back to exactly how it played out. But I mean, the way this transpired, Jane, again, is I had that early morning meeting, and then I said, well, I agree there was a lot known already from what the chief had self-disclosed. There were many important details that needed to be confirmed through a deliberate investigation. I'm fortunate to have a HR director who has done more than 800 of those in her career, I think she told me during her interview. She is the one who immediately upon her first meeting, it was clear that there might be a medical element of what was going on here. So I really don't think there was some gap in time where we didn't have the doctor's determinations yet, and we didn't put him on medical leave until we did, but we were
aware.
Could
you have delayed the administrative leave until medical leave went into place if you thought that it was an underlying medical cause and avoided this particular situation with the administrative leave question?
I'm not sure. Say that again.
Well, I mean, if you thought at the time when Del Pozo revealed this information to you that there was probably a medical reason,
yeah,
and that was something that everybody who was involved in this thought or assumed, could you have delayed the administrative leave till the medical professionals weighed in? You know, and it because the way it unfolded makes it look like, to some people, the chief was placed on administrative leave and then a reason was sort of conjured or come up with to excuse the behavior and hide it from the public because it was a medical leave. You know, so there's
I know some
appearance.
Maybe some are suggesting that. I've actually been I've seen relatively little of that out there, Jane. I actually think I've welcomed that how broadly it has been accepted that having a head injury can, I think there's a broader understanding than maybe I feared there might be, that traumatic brain injuries can lead to impulsiveness, can lead to lapses in judgment. So I actually have seen fairly little criticism on those grounds. I think that I have heard a lot of people very focused on administrative leave versus medical leave. We're kind of down in the weeds in that discussion. I think what has been lost in that is this, what I think is a really important principle, is we don't go running to the microphones to announce things until we kind of have figured out what's going on. And I actually think that ultimately the public appreciates that. It's certainly one of the principles I have tried to bring to this office is when the city speaks, we should speak with accuracy, with one voice. I think, I remember being a private citizen and having times where the police department would be saying one thing and public works would be saying something else and the mayor's office saying a third thing. I think ultimately that erodes public trust, erodes public confidence that the city is really being managed properly. And when people's lives are at stake, when you're talking about the the future of a of an employee who has performed valuable service to the city, and in this case, one who has, I think, performed exceptional service to, you know, more than just the community, really to the state. And in some ways, I think he's been an important voice in national public safety discussions. I think we owed it to him to be deliberate about how we handle this and how we went forward. So I really, listen, I understand not everyone thinks I did the right thing here. I understand people have criticism of what's going on. I would hope there would be agreement that the principle of suspending judgment, getting all the facts, figuring it out before you push out information is one that there should be broad agreement about.
So, Mayor Weinberger, you mentioned, you know, all of this and broad acceptance, which is, I think, undeniably a good thing about TBIs and about brain injury and about mental health and stress and uniformed stress as well. One of the things that you said was you wanted not to rush to the microphone and not to say things before an investigation had concluded. But the way this all unfolded meant that 6 months later, the Burlington police chief resigned. And there are a lot of questions about trust in the police force and trust in city officials, including you. So what went wrong? I mean, if you think that you handled it well and that an underlying medical cause is a good reason for this kind of behavior to be treated and then for the chief to come back and do his work as he did and as you signed off on, what went wrong? What was the problem that, you know, needed to lead to the chief's resignation?
I mean, I think the fundamental problem, Jane, is the chief, in a couple respects, committed some problematic, you know, too serious, made two serious mistakes. And I'm not sure there was any path after those things that happened that weren't going to result in a certain amount of turmoil.
And by the two mistakes, you mean the social media behavior and lying?
Yeah.
To
I mean,
press?
Clearly, the although it was brief, the tweets that were made were, that is not conduct that a police chief should be. There was nothing, the investigation found there was nothing criminal about it, not even necessarily violating written policies, but it just clearly is not conduct that I want to see in a Burlington police chief. And then that was significantly compounded, maybe even more seriously compound, you know, offense of being asked by a reporter and, you know, explicitly being untruthful about it multiple times.
But if those were the two problems and mm-hmm. you knew about both of them and you reinstated him mm-hmm. and it was only when you were asked explicitly by Courtney Lambden, that right. reporter, and you said, I wouldn't have revealed it unless asked about it. If the problem were those two things.
The way I actually said it is sort of the slightly the inverse of that is I was always clear from day one that if asked about it directly, my responsibility would be to answer it forthrightly. And I gave her the same answer last week as I would have had I been asked at any prior
point. But you hadn't been. But if the two
True.
Problems were that he did this behavior and lied about it and there was no path forward from that, there was a path forward. He was reinstated. It was only when the press asked that this became a problem.
Right. I guess what I'm saying, Jane, is I, particularly at that moment of decision, I think one of the key moments of decision when coming back in when he came back in September, when we then had the sign off from the two doctors saying he was fit for duty and he had now supports in place to ensure that he didn't kind of relapse into the prior state. I, at that point, thought it was worth giving him a second chance. And in making that decision, I grappled with it. It was I was quite clear to me that we would probably ultimately be having conversations like this, that the decisions I was making would face great scrutiny. And I tried to exercise the careful judgment that I would like to think Burlingtonians have seen me exercise again and again for almost 8 years now. And there was a lot of competing factors to weigh. There was the strong recommendations of our employment professionals who were recommending that we continue to attempt to keep his medical privacy private as we would for other employees. There was the sense of compassion that I do try to bring to these employment decisions. There was a sense of trying that it was worth, even though it might not work. And I guess in some ways that's what we've seen play out over the last week, that it was worth, despite, I guess, some political risk to myself, that it was worth giving him a second chance because of how valuable an employee I believed him to be. I hope it is not lost in this. And here I've been heartened by some of the public reaction. Brandon Del Pozo's time with Burlington should be understood, despite the other things that I know were kind of on your list at the beginning of what didn't go right in 2019. His time here should be understood to be one of remarkable accomplishment and innovation. No police department in the country has done more to push back against the opioid crisis than Burlington's, and you can see that in the numbers and the fact that we're about to come to our second year in a row now with opioid deaths at a much lower rate than elsewhere and down from by 50% from where they were. Wouldn't have happened without Chief Del Pozo. We have been literally kind of among the part of the nation's pilot in terms of how we respond to acute mental health episodes. We have been part of the nation's pilot in terms of the new training that we're trying to give our police officers so that they respond in ways that live up to the public's expectations for 21st century policing. And on top of all that innovation, the nuts and bolts, what we think of a kind of the hardcore crime fighting, Chief Del Pozo was relentless at bringing people to justice when they had committed serious crimes, violent crimes, bank robberies. I thought it was fitting in some ways that the day that this all broke was also a day that under his direction, the department solved and brought in a recent bank robber. So, you know, I was mindful of all that. Looking back, I've asked myself a lot in the last week, and I've been asked many times in the last week, kind of what you're saying. What went wrong? What did you do wrong here, Mayor? Listen, I think I brought the kind of thoughtful, balanced decision-making to bear here that I have many times before, and I stand by the decisions I made.
Let's go to Fareed, who's calling in from Burlington. Hi, Fareed. Go right ahead.
So, a chief of police, Del Pozo lied under oath in court deposition document regarding the fake account, while Jen Wright, his replacement, by sending fake friend requests, including to myself, engaged in unlawful search and surveillance of your political opponent, which is a violation of our Fourth Amendment rights. Why do you insist on treating this as a social media scandal instead of prosecutable constitutional offenses committed by our city's top law enforcement?
Mayor?
So there's two – let me speak to both of those separate issues that the – caller's raising. First of all, I was unaware of the issue with the interrogatories until the end of last week. When I sat down with Chief Del Pozo, the clip that you played there at the top, I said he faced real challenges in the weeks ahead if he continued on. As later in the press conference, there was some discussion of. One of the things we talked about is that by Sunday night when we sat down and met, I had been advised that there was some concern about the interrogatories. It's not so clear that there was a major problem with them yet, but there was at least because of the kind of details around how it had been asked, but there was at least the question of whether there was something problematic that needed to be amended there. It was clear to me that was going to become an issue in the days to come. So, that is one of the contributing factors, I think, to why he decided that despite the support that remained out there, that he should resign. With respect to the Jan Wright situation, look, no one was more surprised than me, stunned really, that in the moments after the press conference, Chief Wright acknowledged, potentially different, but behavior that was also online, that was in social media, that was problematic.
In some cases, targeting the same individual.
Mm-hmm. And I immediately took her out of the acting chief role, and there is ongoing work as we speak to fully figure out everything that Deputy Chief Wright did and come to a decision very quickly about further action. And I'm expecting to be able to do that shortly. She is an employee that has civil service protections, essentially from the position she had been in, and we're working through some process here. But I feel real urgency to make a decision and take further action there.
So Rich wrote in to say the mayor is bringing up the issue that traumatic brain injury may cause impulsiveness and lack of judgment. If he's claiming that, has he reviewed the former chief's other previous actions through that lens?
So, let me, I'm not sure exactly how to address that question, although what it says to me is this. Look, I visited the chief the day after his bike accident in the hospital, and it was a moment of great relief for me when I went in. And although he was physically quite broken, you know, beaten up after that terrible bike accident, it seemed to me that he was himself, and I was greatly relieved over that. And that even though we all knew his head had taken a beating, that it seemed like he was back to normal. And every time I interacted with him in the months after that, before this incident, that's always the sense I had. I have no reason to really doubt that any consequential decisions he made. I'm not aware, I guess I would say, of any that I've looked back on now in retrospect and felt, maybe there was something going on there at the time.
But, don't you think lawyers may do that now, though?
Well, you know, again, I think that is one of the challenges he faced going forward once all this was out there, that no matter how much therapy he had done, how much he had sort of worked to get this under control, there was going to be questions about that going forward, which I think actually kind of speaks to why, being concerned about that was, there were some principle to that.
Let's talk to Mike, who's with us from Burlington. Mike. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm very interested in the mayor's response. He's saying that he has taken into account Chief Del Pozo's mental health and HR records, and I think that's admirable, but it also comes at the cost of not being transparent to the community, and specifically it's not being forthright with either the reporter who was lied to nor the person who was being bullied online. And so the effect of his decision has been, in my view, to side with the bully rather than the victim here.
Mike, thanks for your comment. I want to bring in Gabrielle, who's calling from Williston, while we're talking about this. Gabrielle, go right ahead.
Hi. I kind of, I guess I would add on to what the last caller was kind of getting at. You had mentioned that your decisions around the chief's leaves were informed by compassion, but it seems like you are kind of protecting somebody in power rather than protecting a more vulnerable member of our community. So I was wondering, one, why didn't you maybe reach out to Charles Winkleman in this context? It seems strange that Charles himself would have to do the kind of heavy lifting of providing evidence for his suspicions and then go on to publish an accusation before it would come to light.
So Gabrielle, it seems let's put both of these questions to the mayor, Mayor Weinberger, both Mike and Gabrielle wondering about, you know, who's getting protected in this situation and why Charles Winkleman hasn't gotten an official apology?
Well, I did apologize to Charles at the press conference on Monday and have repeated that in some media interaction since on behalf of the city that happened. The decision we made the decision I made is that there really was no way to engage Charles or to have or to go back to the reporter without immediately bringing us into this area of protected medical information that we were seeking to shield. And I know that's unsatisfying for a lot of people. Personnel actions are almost always unsatisfying to the media and to the public because by their nature, they protect the employee at the expense of public transparency. And I think in part that is exactly what is playing out here and that we're talking about.
One more thought here while we're talking about this from Hannah, who's with us from Burlington. Hi, Hannah.
Hi, I'm a registered nurse, and I work in Burlington, and I've been a lifelong citizen of Burlington. And I just wanted to say that I specifically work with traumatic brain injury patients and that they suffer quite an enormous amount of injury and can recover and do recover with proper treatment. And the chief of police went ahead and did that, and he did it with perseverance and integrity, and he did his job very well. The mayor was right to protect his medical information and privacy, and I applaud the mayor for standing his ground on that. I'd also like to say that I am horrified by the response of this community to our chief, how they have treated him with such viciousness after his career in Burlington was so successful. And I support the chief, and I support our mayor. Thank you.
Hannah, thanks for your comments. I appreciate hearing from you. I want to ask you, Mayor Weinberger, and then we want to talk about other things as well. What is going to be done about a social media policy? There had already been calls for a more stringent and more formal social media policy, and now you've had both Jan Wright and Brandon Del Pozo find that their ability to be chief certainly has not continued because of social media use. And, you know, this, again, still goes to trust issues.
Yep.
And on that, we have a note from Evan, who says the mayor claims there is no social media policy at the Burlington Police Department. It's my understanding that people being hired for the department have their social media checked. If that's true, wouldn't it create a culture where officers create alternate social media accounts? And what are you doing to uncover them and review them? So lots of questions about social media policy.
So it has taken too long for us to have a formal social media policy. This is something that we've been working on for some time. There has been ongoing work regarding it. The recent chapters of that have been that with any new personnel policy, we need to consult, we're required to consult with the public employee unions. That happened back in September, October. In November, the city council committee, the HR committee that ultimately will need to recommend this to the full council, worked on the policy for the first time, and they had scheduled another meeting before this all happened to take place in January for further work. If they make changes, then we have to go back through the public employee unions, all of which is to say, yesterday I sent out an email to all of our employees saying, look, this attached policy has been the subject of quite a bit of vetting. My guidance to you is to operate under this policy now until a formal new policy is approved by the city council. There may be some changes then, but this is close enough.
And what does that policy detail in regards to anonymous social media accounts or how to use social media?
Yeah, well, so that's tricky, and that really hadn't been the core, of what the policy was saying previously. Certainly, my guidance to department head level employees is that they really, as we have all seen, should not be engaging on Burlington issues with members of the public, certainly the Burlington public, in this, not forthright manner. And that is now clear direction to them. It actually gets trickier when you go to lower level employees who have First Amendment rights that may well, and basically I'm being told, do include the right to talk about city business anonymously if they choose to do so. When you get to lower level employees, the personnel policy becomes much more focused on what they are doing in their official work capacity versus what they're not doing. And to kind of tie in the latter part of the question there, that I think is an interesting question and one that is sort of more front of mind after the Chief Wright revelations is, it may well be there's a much broader culture of problematic social media use in the police department than I had understood until Monday, essentially. And so we are hiring some kind of outside expert to come in and really review how social media is being used. There are very legitimate uses of anonymous law enforcement or surreptitious social media use for law enforcement purposes, and I think we have to continue to protect that while making sure it isn't used to the degree we can within the law for kind of political purposes or inappropriate surveillance purposes, as has been suggested. I'm eager to get this review going because I am not really fully clear on whether this is widespread or not, but we're going to figure that out.
Have you ever used an anonymous social media account?
As I said at the press conference the other day, no, I never have.
Let's talk to Lee, who's calling in again from Burlington. Lee, hi. You have another topic you'd like to discuss.
Yes, I'd like to talk about the mural, the parade mural on the marketplace, which some people call Only White Lives Matter. The resolution calls for taking it down by 2022. I want to ask the mayor if he would support taking it down now, January 2020.
Lee, thanks for the call. And for those who are not aware of it, a big public mural in Burlington has caused a lot of consternation lately. There's been a lot of discussion about the fact that very few, in fact, perhaps only one or two people of color are featured in the mural. It sort of recounts Burlington and Vermont history through the lens of white colonialism and has been vandalized and damaged. And there's been a lot of conversation and concentrated conversation in some circles about what should be done about this mural. And there is a plan to move it and take it off the wall. But Lee wants to know, could we do that sooner?
So, Jane, I appreciate Lee's forceful activism on this. She has come to city council meetings, every city council meeting for months to continue to raise this. From my perspective, we grappled with this as a community in the summer of months ago. This is an issue that I thought kind of almost in a parallel way involved a bunch of competing different public priorities and interests, public art, commitments that had been made to the people who came up with the money to do this. This wasn't really paid for with public funds. There's a whole set of issues that needed to be weighed. Differences of opinions to agree to which this was problematic or not. My own view was I when the controversy surfaced, I thought we needed to look at it because I had always, from the day this went up, which went up as like basically in the days as I was coming into office, I had concerns about it, honestly. Like I thought it would, I was unsure of the process by which the decisions had been made. And it turns out when that did face scrutiny, there were questions, real issues with that process. So listen, we set up a citizen committee to try to balance all these things. They put their back into it. They met many times over the course of several months. They came back and, it was a committee that had a bunch of different perspectives on it. It was hard to get to consensus, but ultimately they did. And they recommended a series of steps that were, I thought, quite thoughtful. They said we should, it isn't always the right thing. Sometimes, if we're talking about a...
Can I cut to the chase and say, is what you're trying to say to Lee, as far as you're concerned, this is settled and you're worried that continuing to bring it up creates more disturbance than you'd like to see?
Well, yeah, no, I think that's exactly right, Jane. I do want people to understand it went through a lot of process. A citizen committee was set up. Then there was a city council vote. The vote was decisive to go in this direction of taking a series of steps that include interpretation and then ultimately relocation. And in a democratic society, I think that's the way we have to do it. We make decisions, and unless dramatic new information comes to light, I think we need to move on, and I think that's what's going on here.
Maybe a quick question here from Phil, who says, it's great that we can pay our municipal taxes online, but the processing fees make it unrealistic. I would have to pay $60 in fees each time I pay my quarterly taxes. How are these fees negotiated with the online card processing company, and how can we make online tax payment more affordable?
Well, I guess what I have to say to Phil is I'm glad we now have the capacity for many municipal transactions to pay them online, or even in some cases, like with the parking meters, to do things by app. At times, I too have been frustrated by how high the fees are. people would be surprised with some of the complexity and the debate over how we handled those things. We have pushed to continue to kind of reduce fees and reduce costs. I would, you know, it's definitely benefits for the city operations when people pay online, but I do think there are areas where we have work to do still.
Corey is calling in from Burlington. Corey, hi.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
One second, sorry. I was wondering, you have, your administration has faced multiple lawsuits from the ACLU, which you have lost, in regards to evicting homeless people. I was wondering how you think that's morally acceptable.
Mayor Weinberger.
So we have debated with the ACLU on a number of things, and we've also won numerous lawsuits. I appreciate the role the ACLU plays in trying to sort through these challenging civil liberties issues. Listen, with respect to homelessness, I'm proud of the record I have there. We have been very active on with homelessness issues in my tenure. We created the first winter warming shelter, a facility that had been long debated and hadn't existed until I supported it. We have pushed hard for the Housing First strategy, which has really had an impact on numbers of chronic homeless population in this community. It's really essentially prioritized housing resources towards the hardest to house individuals. We have seen in recent years the number of children living in homelessness, families living in homelessness, consistently go down year after year as well. It remains a problem for Burlington as it does for basically every thriving American city. We continue to work hard on doing more. It has been a major priority to me. I think we need a low barrier option for people during warm weather months as well as cold weather months.
And by low barrier, you mean for people who are not often shelters require abstinence from substance use, and certainly on the premises, but also that people are not allowed to come in if they are actively high or drunk or exhibiting other symptoms of substance use. And so what you're looking for is a lower barrier shelter for people.
Yes, there's no doubt that one of the reasons, right, that we do have that during the winter warming shelter is low barrier, exactly as you defined it. We do not have such a facility during the warm weather months, and that's one of the reasons you see so many more people camping outside during the warm weather months, and that's something I'd like to do something about. One, I think we all know homelessness is an extraordinarily complex issue. People are homeless for a variety of reasons. It's not all about housing availability, but a lot of it is about housing availability. A lot of it is about housing supply. One thing I'm proud of in 2019 is I think we've really started to have a discussion as a community about what we're going to do to make the supply of housing, all types of housing, permanently affordable housing as well as market rate housing, more plentiful. That is the core reason why housing has gotten so expensive in Vermont, is we have all these policies, rules in place that make it very expensive and hard to build housing. And demand has been rising much faster than supply. I think that's finally now widely understood and agreed to. And once you agree to that, I think it really opens the realm of what we need, you know, of what is possible in terms of reform. So we're having a serious conversation. City Council just passed it last Monday, a serious conversation now about taking away many of the rules that keep people from building accessory dwelling units in their the end of their driveway, in their garages or their backyards. That could create a huge amount of additional homes. We're having a serious conversation about finally eliminating these crazy parking minimum requirements that we put on every project that are in many cases nonsensical, and just all they do is drive up dramatically the cost of homes, and essentially further subsidize this sort of auto-dependent culture instead of helping us sort of move towards a place where other transportation choices also are being properly prioritized. So I'm proud of what we're doing there. There's also going to be a vote on town meeting day for more funding of the Housing Trust Fund and numerous other reforms that are really being actively engaged in the community right now.
Let's go quickly to Christy while we're talking about housing. Christy, you have a question?
Yes. My question is, some of the stuff that you promised to do has not been done concerning housing. Why is not the 32% of all buildings being built supposed to include affordable housing, and that does not say market rent of $1,500 a month for a one-bedroom apartment? Right now we need rent caps. Why is that not being worked on?
So Christy has lots of questions about housing.
Yeah, again, look, I'm a housing guy. My whole career in prior to becoming mayor, I was working for and with housing nonprofits to build more permanently affordable housing, and it's been one of my top priorities as mayor. Why haven't we solved this problem yet? Well, it's a really hard problem that takes years and years to dig your way out of when you've had bad policies in place and problematic practices for a long time. I really would like to think people will look back on this time as one where we created a huge amount of new homes and really changed the trajectory of our housing challenges.
You think you will have created a huge amount of new homes?
Well, we already have created more than... I think the number in the most recent tally was more than 900 homes have been created in my 8 years as mayor, which stands in stark contrast to, you know, we went a whole decade, basically more than a decade, where there were 18 market rate apartments built in the whole downtown. So yeah, we're building homes permanently affordable and market at a rate that we haven't seen in a long, long time.
Speaking of things that are being built or not being built, just a brief chat here about City Place in Burlington, which people who have visited the city will recognize as now where the gaping hole is, which is a project that started back in 2014. It's been stalled. There have been a lot of questions about its development. You've been a supporter of this development, which would include retail space, parking, a hotel. There are other things involved in it. And a lot of people now are wondering what is going to happen and when can we get it really finalized, because it's also hurting local businesses like some of the restaurants nearby that are impacted by the construction. What's the latest on making sure that that actually happens quickly?
So, yes, this is, this has been a major priority of mine to take this part of town, which from my perspective has long been problematic. I think, you know, to take basically a three block area of our downtown and build a suburban mall, was not the right solution for that area. And it's been in decline for a long time. We are going to get a mixed use solution there that restores a vibrant urban neighborhood. We're going to get those streets back. We're going to get hundreds of new homes and jobs. I'm hopeful we're getting back on track. If people have been paying careful attention since I sent this letter in September, there have been a number of important milestones that the project has gotten past. I don't think we're fully out of the woods yet. I think there's a lot to do in the months to come.
How many months?
What we can say, and it's always important to remember, this is not a city project in the sense that we are not the builder. It is a private developer on private land with private capital that is doing this. They have said they will be back in the permitting process for both the Macy's site and the open site by the early part of February. And let's hope they are able to keep that timetable and get it in construction in 2020. I do want to make the point, I think it's important to understand, while there definitely are individual businesses that have been impacted by first the demolition and then the delay in construction, people should keep in mind the big picture, which is that Burlington is very healthy and very vibrant economically. We are at or near historic highs with all of our economic metrics, be it gross receipts tax or sales taxes. We continue to enjoy a very strong, very vibrant downtown.
All right. Well, we'll have to have you back on to talk about some of the things we didn't have a chance to address on today's show. That's Moreau Weinberger, mayor of Burlington. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Jane, it's always great to be with you. I'll be back anytime you want me.